Is everybody there? So Richard Ford is an American novelist who was born in 1944, and his father died when he was 16, which meant that he spent a lot of time at his grandfather's hotel in Little Rock, Arkansas, where he took a lot of his characters from. And he planned on being the hotel's manager after graduating from Michigan State, but after that, his life took a series of vocational twists. He wanted to be a policeman, a soldier, a lawyer, a CIA agent, a baseball coach, but finally, despite the fact that he had dyslexia, he decided to try his hand at fiction writing. In an interview, he stated, "Being a slow reader admitted me to books at a very basic level, word by word. That doesn't seem like a bad preparation to me if writers are people who essentially live in sentences." And I think that this attention to word choice and living in sentences is evidenced in Communist, which was taken from a collection of 10 short stories entitled Rock Springs, which deals with violence and betrayal among rural Montana inhabitants. And it was published in 1987 and made into a stage production in 1999, which I think is interesting to look at, the way that this first-person narrative could lend itself to being put on the stage. Because there's so much to examine for it, I'd like to start where he does at the beginning and note some specifics and then move on to three major topics that I see as concerns for us writers. It begins, "My mother once had a boyfriend named Glenn Baxter." So we're immediately informed that the action occurred in the past and informed of the distance between the narrator and Glenn Baxter. By using the full name, Glenn becomes this formally distanced character as opposed to the mother, who the narrator always refers to as my mother and claims her, and even when she's physically distant, she remains close to the heart of the narrator and what he's thinking. And the separation of we and him is further clarified in this sentence, "We, my mother, and I were living." The narrator proudly asserts his claim on his mother, like he's marking his territory to keep the communist in his once status, he asserts in the first line. There's also a non-fiction-y feel in this first segment because the narrator's trying to get an exactness and to tell his story quickly and honestly. And he admits that he cannot be exact about it, but at the end he finally seems to find a truth in this regular life on the final page where he says that, when he states, "because that was the truth, but I will return to that." And for now I want to touch on the three main areas. While Ford uses dialogue to keep the plot moving, partially by explaining thoughts and partially through the understatement of important emotions, I think one of the most important aspects of this piece for me as a writer was Ford's incorporation of time-progressive words. He's unafraid to keep past and present separated through the use of seemingly repetitive expressions like since and once and then and now. And some other examples include as far back as then, right away, just suddenly, someday but not now, then and after that, and now in a long, long time. And these time-indicative phrases keep a reader grounded in past and present and give us a sense of the narrator's rather simplistic storytelling voice. These are in addition to the regular time indicators that most writers would use, such as on page 30, when Ford employs 2 months had gone by and at 2 o'clock on a Saturday. Another device that I saw Ford using to progress the plot and that I find significant is his use of the word and at the beginning of sentences. I think that this gives the story a continuous feel, as if it's all part of a conversational whole, and as if it's a tale that needs to be told with a sense of immediacy without losing any details. Like, when you're telling a story and you're like, oh, and then that happened, and then did I say that had happened, and then this happened. The and comes at moments of intense emotionality and always revolves around the narrator. It's never used to describe a scene outside of the narrator, which keeps the storytelling close to home. And the and is mainly used in the goose scenes, both during the hunt and as the narrator listens to the flight of the geese with his mother, which highlights these moments as of a nervous desire to capture each detail. A good paragraph pulling in examples of Ford's use of time words and his use of and his use of you, which is what I would like to discuss as my third major point, is on page 542, which is the last page of the story. "And I stood on the edge of the porch with the olive trees before me, looking straight up into the mist where I could not see geese but could still hear them flying. Could almost feel the air move beneath their white wings. And I felt the way you feel when you're on a trestle all alone and the train is coming, and you know you have to decide. And I said, yes, I do, because that was the truth. And I tried to think of something else then and did not hear what my mother said after that." Ford's use of you was something that I found distracting about the piece at first because I wasn't sure who the narrator was speaking to or how I was supposed to react, because it's personal, but it comes with a sense of distance. The slip into you is implemented 6 times. Each seems to address the person to whom the narrator is telling the story, but they're at the same time rich in emotions and thoughts which are close to the narrator's head. So, for instance, on page 531, It reads, "She didn't like you for it." And the reader presumably has never been looking, looked at by Aline in a way that makes him or her feel uneasy, which is what this is referring to, but is still implicated in the you, as if the narrator can't handle the claim without pushing the negative aspect off onto another person. This happens again on 535 with the phrase, "as if you were of no importance in the grand scheme of things." Ford clarifies this overriding concept on page 540 with the line, "You have to live someone else's life to be the expert." And this is exactly what I think the narrator seems to be doing to us as readers, pulling and welcoming us into his life, complete with all of its difficulties. Ford doesn't implicate the reader, but a sense of responsibility for the narrator comes with his you connections. And there's slips that seem to allow the reader a glimpse of the narrator's psyche and his aversion to negative experiences. I think the moment of decision or final revelation is reached in the final you paragraph on page 542 that I had referenced before. The narrator finally connects himself with the you that he had been pushing off from the reader in the line, "You know you have to decide." And I said, "Yes, I do." Split from the rest of the paragraph, this sounds like a dialogue held between the narrator and self. And then the line immediately following that, "because that was the truth," breaks the jumble of yous and I's, and the reader seems to sense the important puzzle piece that has been laid in place, which leads the narrator to break out of the you voice and into the present I in the final paragraph, which is reflective and reserved and still a little awkward, which I think connects a reader to why the language of the piece is often a little strange. I don't know if any of you noticed this, but like on page 532, where he writes, "We drove out on the top of the prairie on a muddy dirt road, fenced on both sides, until we had gone about 3 miles, which is where Glenn stopped." And it seems to have a very awkward sense to this phrasing, which I think imbues the writing with a sense of the way the narrator would write or speak without the necessity of completely switching into his voice, such as at the end when the narrator says, 16 is young, but it can also be a grown man. But because these sentences are a little bit awkward, they draw our attention to them. When the narrator of the present is finally connected to, there's a feeling of distance, and I think that this idea is reinforced by the final, "I have not heard her voice now in a long, long time." Again, we see these time words enforcing the ideas that the narrator is trying to get across. And it's interesting to return at the end to a narrator whose reflections are emphasized throughout the piece through the use of time words to establish chronology and distance from a future, through "and" to reflect feeling and emotion of a remembered story, and through the use of "you" to both distance the narrator from himself and to draw the reader close. Ford's use of word choice is specific, and I think that the result is an interestingly phrased and swift-moving piece. So let's discuss.
Thank you, Laura.